Hi, this is James, and this is Home from the Therapist, episode 10. We had a special episode last week, and the system calls that episode 9, so if it looks a little out of order, it is what it is. I developed a abscessed tooth, so I am not able to do this using my good microphones, so I'm doing this kind of halfway. I just want to remind everybody that we're on www.homefromthetherapist.com and www.hfttpodcast.com. We're also on social media at hfttpodcast. You can also find us on most of your podcasting platforms, including our source platform, anchor.fm. And if you go to anchor.fm, there's a place there that you can donate to the podcast if you want to help us out. I don't have a producer and I don't have any funds to produce. So if you like the podcast, but you think we could use a little better technology or whatever, feel free to help us out and appreciate it. Otherwise, I appreciate you guys listening, and I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. James, and you're listening to Home from the Therapist podcast. Thanks for joining me. It's going to be an interesting episode this week. We had a special episode because I needed extra time. It's been a little bit of a rough patch. So it's a Metallica kind of day. I've been struggling since I walked out of the office. You know, I say it time and again that I am amazed at the variation of states that I am in when I walk out of here. And you guys reap the benefits of that. Welcome to it. Been angry lately, and I've been doing a real good job of taking care of that. And as we come out of it, I can feel that the doc is trying to lead me around to something that I know that it's a place I don't want to go. And maybe you guys listening want me to go there, but afraid of it. Let me ask you a question. I don't know if not always on top of social media, so I don't know if anybody's comment on anything. I think I get noticed for it. But if you want to answer this, go ahead. And maybe then otherwise it's just going to be me asking this microphone. Are you afraid to look in the mirror? I when I know there's a reflection, there's a mirror, I'll glance at it. I look in, just maybe overlook my appearance, make sure that my hair is all right, teeth aren't a weird color. You know, I've got a crooked nose. I got my nose busted a couple times. You know, I used to be a bouncer. I wish I could say that that's how I broke it originally. I actually broke it. I'm going to out him right here. No, I'm not going to say his name. His name's Steve, if he's listening. Was on my dad's softball team, and we were going for a fly ball during practice, and he came across and just... his elbow came right across my nose and just blasted it. And that wasn't bad enough. I went to the nose doctor, the ear, nose, throat guy. He's a big ex-football player. And he sat me down in the chair, said, "Yeah, your nose is broken." And he looks at it, and I'm thinking he's going to, you know, kind of figure out what we're going to do about it. Yeah, maybe surgery or something, right? Maybe they'll have to put something up my nose to stent it in place. Nope. He took his hand, pressed against it, and broke my nose again. Oh, man. Tears just run down the side of your face. I mean, I wasn't crying. I'm telling you, I wasn't crying. But tears, you know, it was some sort of reaction. Anyway. They... looks at me and hands me the mirror, and I unclutch my hands from the arm rails and the chair and grab the mirror and look at it and try to be objective. And I say, "No, you know, actually, it does still look a little crooked." And he goes, "Okay, wham!" and just grabs my nose and cracks it again. I just about hit him with the mirror when I gave it back to him and said, "No, it's good. It's good. Leave it. No, no more. It's fine." I didn't care if it was laying over on my cheek. I didn't want that guy blasting me again. Anyway, yeah, so I got reasons to not like my appearance, I guess. And we can have a discussion sometime about liking yourself. About whether I like myself. I think I'm trying to like myself. And I haven't. I've always not liked myself. So, I hope you like yourself. I don't want to... let me turn this down. I want you guys to get the promo of this radio show. At least for 30 of it. I've struggled with the echo of my teachers from elementary school saying what's really important is that you like yourself. That's what's really important. Doesn't matter what other people think. You gotta love you. And I never have. I don't like myself. I don't like myself now. I'm really embarrassed. Some of the things I've done. I don't like what this guy has done. So I had this struggle that is an ongoing discussion with my therapist, because when we talk about arrested development or something like that, you know, he hasn't used those words. That's just me, because I like that TV show. There's a point at which I had a trauma, and so I'm kind of stuck in that place. And I feel like there's a personality, that's a presence. It's foreign
in a lot of ways because he does things that are against my wishes, my best interests. There's, you know, and I can't fully explain all of it. It's likely due to a lot of different things. When I was in the military, I was knocked unconscious twice. And so what they call TBIs. And there's a lot of parallels between TBIs and ADHD. So it's hard to say if things that I've done was one or the other. As far as I know, I don't know whether I properly have one or the other. I mean, I had TBIs. I don't know that I have reoccurring issues because of it. Those are generally classified as PTSDs, and I don't like owning that. Not because I have a problem with people with PTSD. It's because there are real heroes that have and still struggle with PTSD. And a majority of them are veterans, and it's a real problem that we have. There's 22 veteran suicides a day. Some dispute over that number, but that's the number we use when we talk about the 22. And I believe that PTSD is a large component of that suicide rate. And we can talk about who needs to take responsibility for that. The VA, I believe, is legitimately trying. Let's not have a phone call. How's that? Let me deny that. So I don't want to wear that. There are real heroes, guys that are have done great things. Guys that in the service of this country, we're talking about combat veterans. There are a lot of non-combat veterans of PTSD. Hey, I got a voicemail. Yes, I record this podcast on my phone from my car, guys. That's why it's called Home from the Therapist. I got a 2-in-1 tablet. I'm considering trying to find a way to make that work. We'll see. You know, as I see interest grow, compels me to do more. It encourages me. And, there's a Anchor FM that I podcast from. That's my source. I use it on my phone. It allows me to podcast from my phone, makes it handy. They have a method that you can support this podcast if you want. And I just hate to throw an advertisement in the middle of this, but I don't mention it very often. But if you do enjoy this podcast, obviously you go to your podcast place. They don't charge you anything. We don't charge anything for the podcast. But if you want to support it, if you want to be a Patreon, maybe I should open up a Patreon. That's the thing. Anyway, if you want to be a supporter, you can do it through Anchor.fm for right now. Said ADHD taking me on tangents. I don't know. I do it. I'm better at knowing when I do it, so I'll bring us back around most times. Those of you who've been with us for a while, you've been down some roads with me. Anyway, I don't want to wear the PTSD title because I don't want to take away from combat veterans. And but when you've had two TBIs, I think that's how you classify that effect of the issues you have afterwards. Cold McDonald's coffee. Two creams, two sugars. Anyway, How do you guys feel about wearing labels? Does it make you feel better? Does it make you feel better putting labels on other people? Are we right or wrong for doing that? I think we're comfortable with boxes. We're comfortable with compartmentalizing, with putting people in boxes, putting ourselves into a box. It helps us to define who we are and how we act by getting a box, putting a label on the side. And that guy, I don't know about that guy. Let me figure him out real quick so I can toss him into a box. I can determine his threat level. Is he going to hurt me? Is she going to hurt me? So, if we have these boxes, we put others in, we put ourselves in, we slap labels on it, we have labels that we carry. As a parent, do you have a responsibility for the label that your child wears? Because when they're little, they don't know anything about labels. They're kind of taught labels by us. We give them the labels that they're going to use to put on everybody else and put on themselves. Now, we're not going to give them all the labels. There are people, there are labels they're going to have that we're not going to like, and they're going to get them from people that we don't like. They're going to get them ways that we don't like. But I'm talking about the core responsibility of a parent and labeling. And yes, this is going to come back around to me, but I have two kids, and I try to enforce the family name and what it means. And we're proud of it. It's a little bit of a cheer for the family. But is that enough? Or do I have responsibility to help them develop an image of themselves that they can live in, that they can operate in, that helps them define who they are? Because I believe, wow, that is a loud tone I've got going on there, and I'm going to mute this phone. Holy cow. This is a train wreck of a podcast, folks. Fortunately, the car's not moving, so it's not a literal train wreck. I often say it, and it is true. I do not have a producer, and I don't aspire to be a producer. And so these podcasts are fairly unedited, and you're just going to have to take the raw nature of it. You can feel free to contribute, and maybe I can hire a producer. I don't know. I don't know how that works. I don't know anything about it. All I know is that I want to do this podcast, and I want to get it out, and maybe it'll help somebody. I hope it's helping you, or at least entertaining you. So our kids are walking around, and you know, you can say, "Well, I'm not gonna do that. I'm not gonna give my kids labels. I'm not gonna let them watch TV. I'm not gonna let them come up with these facades, and they're gonna indiscriminately put on people. I want them to be more discerning." Well, you know what'll happen? I think this is my belief. Just, you know, I am not a doctor. I say it. This is the legal portion. I'm not a doctor. I don't aspire to be a doctor. I don't say I'm a doctor. Don't take anything I say as the word of a doctor or anyone who's authorized to give medical advice, because I am not he. But your kid, if they don't have a label, they're going to get one put on them. They're going to get it from the kids at school, the kids at the bus stop, kids in the neighborhood, because that's what the kids do. Because they do it, because that's what they're taught, what we do in our nature. I don't know how to make it stop. All right. Maybe if we figure that out, that's one of the roots of our problems. Kids label each other because it makes them feel comfortable. It helps them. It's a defensive mechanism. They use it as a offensive measure. My little girl got labeled yesterday. She's 6 years old. She's been having a tough time anyway. Mom got her at the bus stop, and all I know is I was doing my stuff, and I hear her come in. She's crying. That sound breaks my heart. And I heard her talking about how one of her friends, somebody she thought was her friend, called her something, told her she was something. Her good friend next to her, that girl put a label on her too. Called her something. She thought my daughter thought they were all friends, and all of a sudden labels are getting slapped around. And you know, even though I didn't make this connection, because this is part of what I talked about today at the therapist, but what we told her is, you know, you can't worry about that. She was, you know, that girl was having a bad day. I'm not saying that she is angry, that she has a problem, that she was, you know, fell and skinned her knee that day, or you know, that she was hurt and so she was lashing out. We're just saying that, you know, that action, you know, kids can turn on a dime. You watch little babies do it, and they just blast with emotion out of nowhere. They're like cats. Cats just all of a sudden shoot to the other room. You're like, what is going on with that cat? Little kids are that way. Their emotions just, it's a torrent. It just sweeps them up. Now, as adults, we try to contain those things. It doesn't mean we don't have torrents of emotion swirling around in places. But kids don't have that much control, and they can go from being very happy to being very upset very quickly, and then go to what they know. The only tools that they've been given. And so this particular girl used a tool in a bad way. She's having a bad day. And we told our daughter, you know what, you just got to forgive her. You can't carry that around. I tell my kids, if someone hands you a pile of crap, hand it. Here, see my hand? Pile of crap, reaching it towards you. You don't have to take it. That's newsflash. you don't have to accept it. Well, you just could. I mean, think about it. We generally just take everything from people because we think it's the nice thing to do, or it's courteous, or whatever else. And you don't have to do that. You can just say, you know what? That's a pile of crap you got in your hand. Stinky pile of crap. And I don't particularly enjoy piles of crap. I don't want to take your crap. Don't pull your hand back. Get it away. I'm not taking it. Hold your hand out there all you want. Not taking your steaming, stinking pile of crap. You get what I'm saying? And I'm not saying, you know, the Twisted Sister, we're not gonna take it. I'm saying that, you know, you have to be indignant. You can be nice about it. You can be quiet about it. You can decide later on You don't have to carry it around if you did take it. And just drop it. Let it go. All right, guys, let's get the car moving. Where I am just fumbling with the recording equipment today. Sorry about that. So, car is rolling. So that's what I tell my kids. You have to take somebody's crap. But my daughter carried the crap around for a lot of the day. And it broke my heart. I could see the pain in her eyes. And I saw how badly she wanted to just be friends. And someone she thought was her friend, she, I think, in a way, betrayed her. And this is a delicate time for her because there's been events recently that I think made her feel vulnerable and unprotected. And as a father, I hate that. I don't want that for my little girl. I don't want that for my kids. I don't want that for my wife. I am committed to my responsibilities as a father and as a husband to protecting my family. And I'm not apologetic about that. I am a man. I'm masculine. And I'm not going to be shamed for who I am. I am in a lot of ways broken. In a lot of ways I've been hurt and I've made bad decisions and I've done things that I'm not proud of. It doesn't make me any less of a man. Because I've done things in the past that weren't right, or you know, whatever, it doesn't mean that I can't stand up now. You can always drop the pile of crap that you're carrying around. Now, this is my struggle now with my therapist, is that I am committed to this process. It's something I'm dedicated to, just as I'm dedicated to the fact and knowing that I'm a man and being happy and proud to proclaim that I still have to deal with the core problem. What I'm saying is, folks, that you can stop making bad decisions. Please do. You know, be reflective, be introspective. Get a therapist, get a third party, an objective third party. Look, if you talk to your friends, talk to your spouse, talk to your girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever. They are always going to have a stake in the game. There are going to be times that they're not going to be able to give you an objective opinion. You need that. Sometimes the person you're talking to is just going to continue to affirm things to you when it's not the right thing. You have to be careful of that. That's what you have to protect against. They don't mean to mislead you. It's just that you have a common interest. You have common feelings towards things. You're oriented the same direction. You have the same point of view. So they're going to naturally affirm your position. You have to make sure that it's not the wrong position, that you're facing the right direction. And for me, that's what a therapist does. So my therapist is trying to get me to, now that I've stopped making bad decisions and I am doing things, operating in the way that I should, a way that I can be happy and proud of, I'm stepping forward along the right path, I still have to deal with the root, the core. I'm always going to struggle if I don't deal with the root of the problem. So here's the thing. If you've been with this podcast, and I think I've alluded to it here for sure, I see this little 11-year-old personality presence inside of me, this repressed ball of emotion, as an enemy. I blame him for all of the bad things that I've done. Because all of the bad things I've done, generally, I was acting in emotion. And he carries a lot of my raw emotion. When I'm speaking here, you'll notice a lot of times that I'm very measured and deliberate in my speech, that I search for words because I want to operate from a place of intellect and not emotion. Yes, there's a time and place for emotion. And I will get emotional, I'm sure, on this podcast. But it's scary. I'm not talking about masculinity. You know, being a man, showing your emotion. No, being human, being raw, and being open is difficult. And I try to operate in that place, because being raw and being open in your emotions is honesty. And I strive for honesty. I don't want to lie, and I don't want to tell lies. We tell lies to other people. We tell lies to ourselves, and then we sell them to other people. And then that's where we live. We live in that place. I'm not doing that anymore. So I have to be raw and open and honest. I've said it before, this is really difficult. I don't want to go to the place where that little boy lives. Yes, I do see him. I see that part. It is a part of me. But I feel like it is an opposing presence. I assign so much blame to him that I don't want to go there. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of emotion, I know that. I mean, the thought of me being on this podcast and breaking down and bawling or you know, whatever. You know, I think as people, we are more comfortable with rage than we are fear and tears and remorse. That kind of uncomfortable, we don't know how to deal with. We don't know how to deal with that emotion. Anger, we got all kinds of ways of dismissing anger, and a lot of people will give you a pass on anger. They really will. I mean, they feel like if you've got justification, if you can give the right story, then they're going to let you get away with your rage, your anger. Well, if you're a sobbing mess, very rarely are you going to get a pass. It's just the way it is. And forget about masculinity, right? I mean, look. Here's my view. Okay, I take it for what it is. If you know, hit me on the message boards or whatever. Go to the website and comment. Masculinity is who I am. It is part of the way I act, the way I am compelled, the way I carry myself. I don't believe that you necessarily should put too much on that. I think that, okay, he's crying, then it's not masculine. Well, you know what? A guy can be masculine and be upset. You know, I think that pick the most masculine person you can think of. Someone physically masculine, like Schwarzenegger, or The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. One of those guys has an emotional blow. He loses a family member. And those guys are crying. If you've ever seen a documentary or combat footage of a veteran, a soldier, who's just lost someone, he's lost a brother, I dare you say that he's not masculine in his sorrow. So those two can coexist, and I think men have to get around that. We have to allow that to be part of who we are, that we can be upset, that we can have sorrow, we can have tears, we can genuinely be upset. I think, told a lot of times as a kid, being a crybaby, you cry too much. I say it to my kids. Quiet, shut up! Being a brat. Brat, quit. You don't know what I say to my kids. Anyway, I think we've heard that stuff. Hey, look. Now my parents are somewhere running a razor blade across their wrists. This is an indictment on anybody. But, kids, like I said, kids get labels. They pick them up from us. They assign them, they get assigned them, we wear them, and we have got to come to terms with it and decide what labels we want to wear and what ones we don't and what ones we're going to help other people with, like our children. To let them know that they're beautiful and smart and funny. That's who they are. That if they don't have to worry about anything else, if they are just left to who they are, person, that's who they are. When they start to put on one of the labels that they've been given, when they feel threatened, that they act a different way. My daughter was really upset. Sometimes you see your kid upset and you go, oh man, they're really milking it this time. I think it's because, they get upset and they're crying and that emotion pours out, and then it kind of runs a little thin, or something catches their brain, and then they realize, like, hey, I actually had a legitimate reason for being upset. Like, my brother punched me in the eye. I should be upset about that, except that cat over there is chasing a fly and jumping like 3 feet in the air to try to get it. It's hysterical. But let me get back to crying, because I really want mom to know that a wrong has been done. That's not the kid's fault. And we say, oh, you're just milking it. Stop it. See, you were laughing just a second ago. we're doing it because we don't want our kid to be upset. It's maybe it's as much about us as it is about them. I can't handle my kids being upset. And honestly, I can't handle myself being upset. Maybe that's what this is about. This is why I go to a therapist, guys. And that's what I figured out today. I'm not there to get my label. My therapist has not given me a label. Has not. I, at the beginning, I did. And my therapist basically said, hey, I don't think it's important right now. What's important is that we talk about what you're doing and why you're doing it. Because that's a problem for you and for other people. Let's deal with that instead of worrying about coming up with a diagnosis. Now I've been going long enough that you'd have to think, well, hey, this guy pretty much knows by now what's going on. He can give me a diagnosis, but you know what? I don't want it. I mean, maybe I need it. Like, maybe I'm going to, like, have to fill out some paperwork somewhere. But in the medical world, you use a diagnosis so that you can, you know, determine past the treatment, right? Like, you're sick. Well, let's figure out that you've got the flu. Now, you got the flu. We know how to treat the flu. This is what we do for the flu. Common cold, we do something else. Let's get a diagnosis. It doesn't matter to you while you're on the couch whether somebody tells you you've got the flu or the cold. So, I realize that. I have to get through my problems and deal with it. And maybe I need to worry about where I was that got me sick. Who I was around, you know. Maybe I need to stop going on airplanes, subways, or maybe you need to stop hanging out with that person that's toxic, by getting you sick. I don't know. There's a lot of reasons, right? But I don't need that label. And I also know that there is a danger that when you get a label, a lot of us, hey, a lot of you guys, you ran out to a doctor so that you could get your label. And then when you got your label, then you knew how to act. You knew how to behave. Because we're told what that kind of person does. So, I don't want to get a label and then start acting that way. Whether subconsciously or otherwise. I mean, yes, look, it helps explain things. It sucks when you don't know what's going on. I'm going to tell you a story. Every once in a while, I'm going to tell you stories. I haven't told a lot, I don't think, in this podcast. But I'm you know, I kind of do it a lot, actually, in real life. So apparently this is the fake me sometimes. I completely got off on a tangent. And I don't know where I'm at now. That's me. I'm spun around. Oh, I was talking about labels. See, we'll slap a label on that. That's ADHD right there. Anyway, I hurt my back. And I had this great pain in my back. It was chronic, persistent. It was at times debilitating. And I was going to the VA. And the VA wouldn't give me a label. And better yet, they weren't giving me effective treatment. They were giving me things that weren't working. So the pain grew. And the VA, they've got money to spend on diagnostics. So they gave me the x-rays and gave me the MRIs. Yet they never gave me the correct label, and they never gave me the correct treatment. They treated me like I was faking it because I didn't have a label, the right label. But I knew that I was in pain. I knew it wasn't something in my head. Eventually, I stopped being able to use my leg. It was going numb, and then eventually, you start losing function. And I had to start walking on a cane. My leg was starting to drag. And I had pain. And the pain was making me angry. And all of it was welling up. So I was losing control with family. I was irritable. And I didn't want that for my kids. I need to do something about it. I'm in pain. Won't somebody help me? So finally, I started going to civilian doctors. And they look at all these x-rays and MRIs I got from the VA. And they don't find the right label or the treatment. It gets worse and worse, and I feel like I can't bear it. When will it end? I'm not comfortable laying down. I'm not comfortable standing up. I'm not comfortable sitting in a chair. I'm just crying out, oh God! So much pain. I don't know why. And then I went to a doctor, and he's a neurosurgeon, and this brilliant doctor looked at my MRI for 30 seconds, and like an auto mechanic, but you find, get your car to the right auto mechanic, and he opens up the hood, and he goes, there's your problem right there. He looked at my MRI, and he says, you see this thumb-size squish coming out of your disc? See, it's pushing into this white area on the MRI, and that white area is your spinal cord. So this little thingy pushing into this thingy would naturally cause pain and inhibit function. Praise God! Well, what do we do about that? We know what it is. What do we do? Well, you know what we do? Apparently, we have to convince the insurance. Doesn't that suck? You got to do all the things that the insurance needs to see you do. Because no one's given you the right label up until now. So, you know, they're going to want you to do some things. They're going to want you to do some therapy. They're going to want you to do stuff. So I exercised in a pool with a brilliant physical therapist. And it didn't do any good, of course. And I had other diagnostic tests done to further support what my brilliant neurosurgeon was saying. This guy's literally a brain surgeon, and the insurance thinks they know better. And it was enough that I was able to get into a pain doctor and get some medicine that would give me windows of not relief, but just dialed it down. Just dialed it like a radio that's been blaring all this time, and somebody finally turns it down to a tolerable level so that you can function. You can have a quality of life. You can do things. Doesn't mean your leg starts working again. It just means that you're not going to blow up on your kid for no reason and make them think that there's something wrong with them, when actually you're being a jerk because you're in pain. You know, I have an excuse. It is what it is. I mean, a lot of people are in pain, and they have bad reactions. And anyway, eventually we got approved for surgery. The right surgery. There were other surgeries, but I have had a brilliant neurosurgeon that knew the right way to take care of the problem. And that right way was a discectomy. In other words, it's going to completely remove the disc that is faulted. Just get it out of there. And let's put a new structural piece in there. And your body will accept it. It'll calcify. And these two bones in your back are going to come and fuse with this, and they're basically going to be one big bone after a certain amount of time. And so you won't have this problem. There'll be no disc there to push in. And furthermore, generally when you have back surgery, surgeons take the shortest path. They make an incision through the muscle and soft tissue in your back to get to it, and they have to come around the spinal cord a lot of times to deal with the problem. Well, my brilliant neurosurgeon, his name is Dr. Gunwant Malik. He's in Columbus, Ohio. And I'm just saying that because I'm sure I've got family and friends around here that listen to this. I owe him so much. And Dr. Malik had another surgeon who his whole part of the procedure was, is he would make an incision along my belt line in my tummy, and then they'd move all my guts aside, and they go straight down in this opening that they've just made, and basically make a hole. Like we say in the Army, push everything out of the way. And push everything out of the way, and they go straight at the spine. And they make the cut there. And he removes the disc, and he puts in the piece, and it calcifies. And the stomach has to heal. He also had a brilliant guy doing that. Let me tell you get your stomach cut and sewed up, you are apt to have a rupture because there's so much pressure that we push against that, right? And so a lot of people, when they've had operations or cuts and stuff on their stomach, they have ruptures, and that's it causes problems for him. You know, everywhere I go, there's a lawnmower or weed whacker, because I'm at home right now, and at the doctor's office, there's one. So I'm sorry about the noise. Anyway, I can't do this in the studio because I'm already home from the therapist. Because I got to reflect right afterwards. I can't give it time because you convince yourself, you tell yourself lies. So I had the surgery. And my stomach hurt. I felt like my guts were going to pour out on the floor like something out of a horror movie. But once I got through that, after a couple days, I had no back pain. And by the time I stopped worrying about my stomach, my leg worked. I had function returned. I had no more pain. Dr. Malik was a godsend. He gave me the diagnosis so he could direct the treatment to the right place. And you know why it didn't matter necessarily that I knew, but it was important that I knew that I wasn't crazy. That people would stop treating me like I was making it up. And I am sure that a lot of you can relate to that. Well, when you go to a therapist and you do things that are outside the bounds of what you feel is acceptable in your own morals and ethics, then you want to know why. The people around you want to know why. Now, a lot of them just want you to stop doing it, actually. That's actually the truth. They want you to kind of not do it anymore and do the right thing. But you feel like that it's important to know. So, I just turned the car off. You thought it was important to know because you want to determine the label. You want to find out what the label is. You can find out what that means. Go look it up. Hurry up. Run to the internet. And then you can start trying to figure out, okay, well, if I've got this, then I might tend to want to do this, so I better look out for that. Or these are the things that trigger me. You know, yeah, see, you got to then start worrying about treatment. If you've got the right doctors involved, I can take my diagnosis to another doctor. They can quickly understand where my problems are and direct treatment. It doesn't help you really to stop doing what you're doing. It helps you identify when you are heading down the wrong path a lot of times. With ADHD, medication works very well in helping the person cope. But only cognitive therapy can help them really take control of their life. And that's through a course of them making the right decisions and being determined. Again, not a doctor. I'm saying these things. I'm not a medical professional. Okay? Second legal disclaimer. So anyway, in our lives, you can get your label, jump into your box, and that'll make you feel comfortable. But it doesn't deal with the real problem. It doesn't deal with the root of it. It does help you find treatments, but it's up to you. It really is. And I have some real core issues, and I really know where they are. They're my cave on Dagobah. That's where you go in and you fight Darth Vader and you find out that it's actually you under the helmet. I've got a place like that. And I blame part of me for all the bad things I've done, and I push that part of me into that place. But at some point, I've got to go in there and I've got to face it and I've got to deal with it. And I don't know if I'm going to win. Did anybody, when the first time you saw Empire Strikes Back and you saw Luke go in there, was there a thought in your mind, he's not ready? Yoda was saying it. Holy crap, the mower's right next to the car. Can you believe this? Okay. Yoda was saying that Luke wasn't ready. Don't take your weapons. You're not going to need those. You don't want to go in there like that. You get your butt handed to you going saber to saber with the Dark Lord of the Sith. And I was worried for Luke. Luke, he triumphed, I guess. Did he? Did he win? How do I know when I go in this place that I'm going to win? I'm scared of that. I'm being honest. I'm afraid. I'm afraid that it's going to break me, that I'm going to, I don't know. I feel like I can control, I have some degree of control here, and that I would lose it there, because that's the emotional part of me that comes out. I can't logically think my way around this one. So we've gone long. I apologize, or, you know, hey, maybe you guys like the long ones. Maybe it just zipped by for you guys. As for me, I don't know whether you guys like the long ones or you like the short ones, and I can't, you know, find a book somewhere to tell me how long these should be. I'm not trying to market to anybody. Just trying to put this thing out here. Maybe, you know, my therapist keeps saying he wants to schedule a two-hour session because he wants me to go into the cave. And it's going to take longer than an hour to do that. Probably, you know, another needs 45 minutes just to mop up afterwards. You know, I don't know how long to make this, and I just, you know, I mark it by the drive home. You guys know that sometimes I don't even leave the parking lot before I get the whole episode done. Sometimes I'm already home and sitting here in the driveway like I am. I did a little bit of both today because I got a lot on my mind. And trying to be good. Trying to do the right thing. Trying to be the man I want to be. I'm trying to be the father and the husband that I should be. And I need to deal with that other part of me, and I'm not ready. I'm afraid. But I'm going to man up because I'm committed to the process, and that's why I told my therapist today. I'm going to go forward with it. I don't know when. I'm only scheduled for 1 hour next week, but I'm going to have a two-hour episode at some point. I'll try to give you guys warning because I'm going to go into his office for 2 hours, and it's probably going to take more than an hour for me afterwards to talk to you guys about it, if I can. So there it is. That's where I'm at today. I hope you guys have a great day. I really appreciate anyone who's listening or automatically downloading, you know, and just... Hey, this is James. You know what? I think I got to the hour mark and it stopped recording. So I think the application will let me know where to stop. So I don't know, because I wasn't looking, and I was kind of being open and emotional. So if we missed it, we missed it. I don't listen to these episodes, and I don't have a producer. So if you do listen to the episode and you want to tell me how bad I messed up, feel free to hit us on homefromthetherapist.com or hfttpodcast.com or on social media at hfttpodcast. So I'm out there. All of those places have areas to comment. I see you do. I thank you for listening. I thank God for you. I really do. You guys mean a lot to me. And I see the subscriptions. I see the downloads. That encourages me. I hope that I encourage you or that you get something out of this. It's not easy. It's a struggle sometimes. You know, I hope you have a great week. I hope that you are good to yourself and good to everyone else. And I hope you listen next week. Take care.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.